Welcome to Martha Runs the World, a podcast with a new take on running, fitness, and all things health-oriented. I'm Martha Hughes, your host, and each week I present a new topic that is of interest to all runners. Welcome to episode 226 of Martha Runs the World. Thank you so much for joining me. I have a great show today. I'm going to talk about one of my favorite memories of a race. I'll put it that way. The Beta Breakers today has little resemblance to the raucous and very fun race of yesterday. Sure, it's still a fun race. Okay, you can have a lot of fun at this race. And it's a decent race. It's a great race. It's a decent race. If you want to have a good time at a race, at a road race, it's a good race to do. But you could never tell that it was once the world's largest moving party. The very first Beta Breakers was held in 1912. It was called the Cross City Race. It was started as a way to lift San Francisco citizens' spirits after the horrors of the 1906 earthquake. And you've all heard of the 1906 earthquake, I'm sure. On April 18th in 1906, at 5:12 a.m. precisely, San Franciscans awoke to a force that shook the western U.S. from southern Oregon all the way to Los Angeles. The violent shocks lasted 45 to 60 seconds, and I don't know if you've ever experienced an earthquake, but something lasting that long just brings nightmares to me. I've experienced a big one in 1989, and it didn't last that long. It wasn't nearly that big, and I can't imagine what those poor people felt. It was a magnitude of 7.9. That's huge. The loss of life was often misquoted as 700. I mean, the city people didn't want anyone to know how big it was. Or I should say, didn't want to know how bad the loss of life was. Most of the people died not from the quake, but from the fires that happened after the quake. But now that number is way underestimated, and it was most likely probably over 3,000 lives, or at least 3,000. The quake and following fire leveled nearly all of the downtown area. They figured that probably the large Van Ness Avenue stopped the fire from going west of Van Ness. Van Ness was considered the big downtown street, and that's where a lot of the shops were, but the width of Van Ness stopped the fire from going west. So pretty much everything west or east of Van Ness burned down. That's why you don't see any Victorian buildings in the east part of Van Ness in those neighborhoods. You only see them west of Van Ness. By 1912, the citizens were rebuilding their lives and needed something to uplift them. Also, in this planning stages, the Panama Pacific International Exhibition, which was a world's fair that was going to be happening in 1915. That was also a really big one, and there's still a lot of buildings left from the World's Fair, including the Palace of Fine Arts and the buildings on Treasure Island. Actually, Treasure Island is part of the Panama Pacific exhibition. That was actually built for that. And the race started with fanfare and fun. So it was a real road race, and people dressed as a road race. Costumes came later, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. But it from the very start, it was started with positivity and joy. And Beta Breakers has run on the same course for longer than any race anywhere. There are older races like the Boston Marathon, and see my episode number 169 on the history of the Boston Marathon. But these races have changed at least parts of their course over time. Beta Breakers has followed the same course the entire time. Every year, the race has a ton of people, but there have been a few years where it's had a smaller participation number. During World War II, the participation was down to 50 because, of course, all of the young men were off fighting the war, either in the Pacific or Europe. And, of course, in those days, women didn't run it. But it still went on. Women were allowed to run the race in 1950, and at that time it had about 2,300 runners. In 1986, the race broke record books as the largest race with 110,000 participants. I'm pretty sure I was at that one. I used to do all of them back then. It was eventually overtaken in 2010 by the Sydney Surf to Surf. It took a while. They held that record for quite a few years. In the 80s, the usual participation number was around 70 to 80,000. The San Francisco Examiner was a sponsor then, and the first 10,000 runners, or finishers, got their, they were runners, so that's accurate, got their names in the Monday's paper. I remember that it was a pretty big deal for a lot of us runners, and I took the race pretty seriously. As a runner, I worked hard to be one of those finishers, and you really, really wanted to be one of those 10,000. And I got the paper as soon as I could to scope out my name on that list. It was pretty important to me. The race is called Beta Breakers because it starts at SF Bay and finishes at Ocean Beach. On the other side of the city, it's 7.6 miles long, or a 12K, and it starts on Howard Street, and it goes up until it gets to about 9th Street, and then it goes on Hayes, and it goes up Hayes Street Hill. Everybody knows how tough the Hayes Street Hill. Hayes Street Hill has about three blocks of really nasty, nasty uphill. It's vicious uphill. But once you get up that uphill, you're good. When you get to Divisadero, you make a left, and then you go up into the Panhandle. And then once you hit Golden Gate Park, it's pretty well downhill until Ocean Beach. So it's a pretty nice course, except for Hay Street Hill is always tough. It's really tough. And I remember that all the people in the Victorians would be out on the stoops on the porch playing blasting music and cheering you on to get over that really nasty, nasty hill. Oh, that was tough. Tough, tough hill. The course ends at the beach, and there are plenty of post-race festivities. Now, they've moved the post-race stuff in recent years. It used to be at the polo fields. It was a long walk uphill to the polo fields, I think probably a half mile, but it was a great place to meet friends and family, and they would have these big areas, A, B, C, D, you know, all the way A to Z, all the way around the polo fields. It's a big area, and it was really easy to meet up people back then. In the 80s and 90s, the beer sponsor was Budweiser, and I think in the 80s, I don't know if they stopped that by the 90s, but I know in the 80s, the Budweiser truck would pull up. They would pass out free cups of beer to everyone until the truck ran out. Yes, big, regular cups of beer, 8 ounces of beer or something, or 10 ounces or however much that it was. It was a lot of beer. And they would pass it out, and it was all free. And they would give free samples of food. Yes, all free. It was loads of fun. I mean, we would all be loaded before noon, let me tell you. Oh my goodness, it was so fun. There would be good entertainment as well. I remember one year Ray Charles played, and then another year Smash Mouth played. Okay, most years were good entertainment. Most years. It was a lot of fun, though. The bands were pretty good. The music was good. Food was good. It was such a fun time. I can't remember a race that I did every year that was so much fun. It was just a great, great time. One thing I remember that there were a lot of non-runners who tried to run this race. They wouldn't train. They just tried to do this race. This was like the only race that they would try to run. And there would be a lot of injuries on Monday morning. Gee, I wonder why. You've never run, and then you try to run 7.6 miles. I know one year I did it with a friend of mine, and he hadn't run that far ever, and he was injured on Monday. Yeah, I wasn't surprised. I told him he probably shouldn't do it, but he did it anyway. So what are you going to do? Now, there are a few things that made and still do, well, few things that made Beta Breakers different. And one of them is the costumes. Now, they still have the costumes. There were more costume runners and walkers than you could imagine. Many of the runners wore costumes. I would say most of the costume people were walkers because a lot of the costumes are elaborate, but a lot of the runners wore costumes too. All sorts of costumes, from political ones to brides and grooms to Elvises to Star Wars to Disney's to rock stars and everything in between, to San Francisco sites like Coit Tower and the Golden Gate Bridge. All kinds of stuff. People were very, or still are, I would imagine, are very, very creative. Like this group of people went as why as grapes and cheese. Yes, they did. And the more elaborate costume participants walked or still walk. I guess they still do it. I haven't done it in a few years, but I'm sure they still do it. There's a judging area in the Panhandle part of Golden Gate Park. Now, Golden Gate Park is Maine. Golden Gate Park is actually the largest city park in the country. It's very long, and the Panhandle is this very thin part that sticks out before you get to the normal part of Golden Gate Park. And the judging would be in the Panhandle area. And so the runners usually aren't going to want to stop because they want to get their time. But the walkers don't care, so they're going to stop there and they're going to get judged. And there's a prize for the best costumes. So they would go there and be judged. And a lot of these costumes could be very elaborate. You just have to be able to walk or run in them. You can carry what you want, but you have to be able to walk or run. So that gives you a little bit limitations on them. Now, costumes weren't always part of the race. It started in the 70s with two running friends who ran the race in tuxedos for like 8 years in a row. And after a couple of years, people caught on and people started running in costumes. They said, "Hey, this is cool. They got a great idea. Let's do it." And this was back in the 70s when most people ran the race. And then after time, people started walking. More people started walking. And so you had walkers and runners. And as time went on, more people walked. And so it wasn't just a running race. There were walkers and runners. And then it got more elaborate. And there's also a group of runners and walkers called centipedes. Now, centipedes are a group of runners and walkers together, and they have to be tied together somehow with string or bungee cord or something, but they have to be strung together, and it's called a centipede. Now, they have their own timing category. So if they are competitive, they can compete with the elites as timed, but they have to be tied together. And they can be costumed too. So they have their own costume category as a centipede. They can get awarded as the best costume as a centipede if they want. But again, they have to be tied together or strung together in some way. Now, my favorite centipede costume are the salmon, the salmon swimming upstream. I love them. I have seen them every time I run. And they start at the end of the race. And they finish at the beginning of the race because they're salmon swimming upstream. I actually don't think they're strung together, but they do the race totally different than anybody else. I mean, you actually, when you're running, you see them going through the crowds and they make noise going through the crowds, and you actually see them. So they really are salmon swimming upstream. They're just so awesome. They're just so beta breakers. You're not going to see this anyplace else. And they're still around. I did it one time. I actually did the beta breakers once as a nostalgia trip, like, what was it, like 5 or 6 years ago. And it was pretty fun. It was fun. It wasn't the same. It wasn't the fun, the loads of fun that it was before, but it was okay. I don't think I'll do it again, though. I don't think so. Fortunately, the costumes are still around. Now, one thing that is not around anymore that's been ruled out by the city of San Francisco and the race directors are the floats. They had these amazing floats, and they would be at the back. They would be at the end of the race, way at the back, and they would be so elaborate. These floats would be terrific, and they would be manned by a whole bunch of people who would bring up the rear of the race. And you would pay an admission for a float, and they would have wheels on them. And something about most of the time they would be involving alcohol. Of course they would, because it's beta breakers. One of my favorite, I think the best one was the tiki bar. And this one was a moving tiki bar. And there was a bartender on it who would be making drinks for everybody who was involved in that particular float. He wouldn't be giving out to everybody in the race, just to the people who were involved in the float. And it was really cool. It was fun to watch. Now, the last thing that is supposed to be gone, and I really hope it's gone because I found them annoying and I don't mind them being gone, are the naked runners. Now, I don't know when they started because they weren't around in the 80s. Or I don't remember seeing them in the 80s. Maybe there weren't that many of them. But they must have gotten started somewhere in the mid-90s or something like that. But they were. I just found them annoying and just not necessary. I mean, it's like, we don't really want to see you. We don't want to see you running. We don't want to see you naked. It's just, no. Bart Yasso wrote about his experience with naked running in his book, My Life on the Run. He liked it. No, and he said he would do it again. Well, Bart, you can have it, because I don't like it. I don't want to see people like that. I will say that the only good thing about them is that it made me run faster to get away from them. It's like, I don't want to look at that. No, get away, please, get away. Unfortunately, though, things got out of control. There was just so much public drunkenness, I guess, and people just took advantage of it. And maybe there was a lot of trash and just a lot of some incidences and things like that. So in 2009, the city, San Francisco City Council and the race directors changed everything. No floats, no alcohol, and thankfully, no naked runners.
We'll be right back.
Hey, quick question for you. Are you someone who wants to be fit, healthy, and happy? And what if I told you you could get your dream body by simply just listening to a podcast? I'm Josh.
And I'm KG, and we are the hosts of the Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast.
Listen, we get it. Fitness isn't easy. Carbs, no carbs.
Just stop, okay? It doesn't have to be that complicated. And that's why we made this podcast. We get straight to the facts so you can become your best you.
So the way to check us out is click the link in the show notes or search Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast on any of the major podcast platforms. We'll see you soon.
Now, the post-race festivities are not in the polo fields now. They're at a stage at Ocean Beach. And this, to me, is not a really good setup. It's super windy and cold there. When I did the race a few years ago, I didn't like the new setup at all. They have fences all over the park and all over the area. So it's just, it just was not a nice setup. I didn't like it. I wish they would have brought it back to the polo fields again. But I guess they have to do it that way just to keep people hemmed in or keep the non-runners out. They're trying to make it more like a, like you could only be here if you're part of the race or something like that. I don't know. I didn't like it very much. It's still a fun race if you're considering doing it. It's a fun way to see some of the sights of San Francisco, and it's well produced. I would suggest if you want to do it once, sure, but it's not the same race that it once was. Now, the record holders of the race are Sammy Kitwara of 33 minutes and 31 seconds, of the men. The women, Lineth Chepkuri, of 38 minutes and 7 seconds. The men's centipede winners are Team LinkedIn with 36 minutes, 44 seconds, and the women's centipede is Team Impala Racing Team with 46 minutes and 37 seconds. So those are pretty fast people. And yeah, I would suggest if you want to do it, do it. You can do it seriously, or you can just do it and have a good time and don't worry about it and just have fun. I would suggest the latter, just have fun and just do it once if you want. And just remember, it's not the same race that it once was, but just have fun with it. I mean, why not? I wanted to touch briefly on the Sierra Nevada mountains snowpack conditions. We've had an unusual winter in California, all of California. We've had a ton of rain. I mean, just record-setting rain. And that means if we have rain down here in the Bay Area, we have record-setting snow in the mountains, in the Sierra Nevada mountains. That means that there's going to be snow up in the mountains probably for most of the summer, if not all of it. That's going to affect a lot of races. If you have races planned in the mountains, you have to prepare for that. If you want to just even go hiking in the mountains, you have to prepare for that. The California Department of Water Resources has measured at one of the mountain stations that it has 126.5 inches of snow depth. That's a 237% of annual average. That's enormous. It's well needed and will help greatly with the state's drought conditions. The last 3 years have been drought, so this is really, really needed. But it definitely will have effects on mountain races. If you do plan to do any mountain races at any time this year, expect that there will be snow. There may be lots of snow, but there will be snow. So just plan on that. Be prepared. Have maybe a bit more warm clothing than you think. If it's a long race, just be prepared for that. You know, I was going through Instagram and briefly saw someone who started the PCT, the Pacific Crest Trail through hike, and already or early this year. And if you don't know, I am not a through hiker, but I love following people or checking people out who do through hikes of those really long trails like the Pacific Crest Trail and the Continental Divide Trail. I actually had interviewed someone who had just finished the Pacific Crest Trail a couple years ago. So if you want to check that out, that's an earlier show that I did. It's not something that I would ever do, so I always admire people who would do something like that, who would take a few months out of their year and actually hike a 3,000-mile trail. That's pretty amazing to me. But it has to be planned. You have to follow the weather. And even if you already made your plane tickets and even if you already planned things, if the weather is not perfect for it or if things change, you got to change your plans. You can't just say, well, I already made my plans, so I'm going to do it anyway, if the weather is not conducive to your plans. And someone starting out too early, and the thing with the PCT trail is that if there's too much snow and you start out too early, you're going to be stuck. Once you get through the desert, so you do want to start out early enough so that the desert is not too hot. However, when you get to the base of the Sierra Nevada mountains, there's a spot called Kennedy Meadows. And when every thru-hiker gets to Kennedy Meadows, they know that that is the starting point of the PCT of the Sierra Nevada mountains. But if you get there and there's still snow on all the passes, deep snow, you're not going to be able to get through. So what are you going to do? Sit at Kennedy Meadows for a month? I don't think you could afford to do that. So you'll probably be turned back. You'll probably have to go home and come back in a month or two. So it doesn't make a whole lot of sense not to pay attention to the weather reports, not to pay attention to what the snow conditions are. And I know a couple of people who had posted pictures that they were almost at Kennedy Meadows. And this was like even 3 weeks ago. It's like, man, you are too early. It snowed. It has snowed since they did that in the mountains. It is still snowing. So you are not in a good place right now. You are not going to go anywhere for a while. Yeah, so that is just not good planning at all. You're not paying attention. If you're not paying attention to the weather, if you're not paying attention to nature, then I don't know. That's not a good sign for you. And that we as trail runners, especially in longer races, also need to pay attention to the weather. So just pay attention to what's going on. Know what the conditions are where you're going to race. Know what it's going to be like. Know if it's going to be really snowy, if it's going to be really muddy. Know what it's like before your race, because you're going to help out yourself and you're not going to get into trouble, because we can get into trouble if we don't know what something is like. It can be worse than making it a miserable experience. It can make it a dangerous experience. So just letting you know, just giving you a little advice here from someone who hasn't run for a while, but has a lot of time to look up weather. But I will be out there again soon. And I'm going to put my own advice into practice. And I'll let you know how that goes. But that is today's show. And I just wanted to give you a little bit of information about a race that I used to love very, very much. I used to run Beta Breakers every year. I loved it so much. It is part of my history, and it's part of why I love running so much. Yeah, I know it's not like it used to be. I know it never will be like it used to be, but I have very fond memories of that race. I really do. I had so much fun in that race. My friends and I would have just a great time every year at Beta Breakers. And that will always be with me. But yes, if you want to go, I would say go do it. Have a good time. And enjoy. Because it's still fun. It's still a good one. All right, now, my website address is martharunsworld.com. And if you want to email me, it's martharunsworld@gmail.com. And until next week, let's tie up our shoelaces and go for a run.